Thank you for the introduction. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Let me start. Today I will talk about my work on modeling the pseudo gap state in cuprates by quantum disordered pair density wave. And this work is done together with Patrick and Santo. So I feel people with theoretical background are usually not familiar with cuprates. So let me give an overview. So cuprates has a long history of 30 years. And before cuprates, people think about superconductor as illustrated on the left. Basically, at high temperature, we expect a metal described by Fermi liquid. And below a few Kelvin, electron pair condense, and we have a BCS superconductor. But cuprates are very different. So here I show a phase diagram. The y-axis is temperature as usual. And there is an additional x-axis that describes the whole doping relative to a half filling. So people are first attracted by this superconductor. And the transition temperature of the superconductor can be as high as 100 Kelvin, much larger than the few Kelvin regular superconductor. However, people soon realize that the normal state before it goes superconducting is much more challenging and much more interesting to study. And for people of my age, it may be worth emphasizing that in the history, this material alone set a high standard to both condensed matter theory and experiment. So at very high temperature, we see this so-called strange metal. And here we still have a large Fermi surface, just as a Fermi liquid. But the transport property of this strange metal is very different from usual Fermi liquid. But I will not talk about this phase here. Now, today I focus on the pseudo gap region. And the pseudo gap region is below the temperature T star, like here, this line. By the way, can you see my mouse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So this pseudo gap phase is where we start to lose the large Fermi surface. And people find in this phase there are electron gap, but the electron gap happens only on part of the Fermi surface. And the rest of Fermi surface are still gapless and seems to exist as arcs that does not connect to any closed surface. So that's very puzzling. So people don't understand this electron gap, so they call it pseudo gap. Along this doping axis, right, at zero doping, we have one electron per site. And because of Coulomb interaction, a Coulomb repulsion, electron stuck to give an insulator. And after we remove 20% electron, the rest of electron become mobile again. And we have this Fermi liquid as usual. And this pseudo gap is again an intermediate region between the insulator and the Fermi liquid. And so in the last 10 years, not much happened theoretically, but experiments keep adding new things to the phase diagram. For example, now we know there's charge density wave with period 3 to 4 in the pseudo gap region. And there are other strong evidence for other lattice symmetry breaking. For example, the breaking of lattice rotation. So, I should mention that in the last 10 years, the resolution for electron spectrum has increased tenfold compared to 10 years ago. So that's why I think to theorists, cuprates may be getting interesting again. So given this rich phenomena, our goal here is to try to use a single assumption to explain the pseudo gap phenomenology at low temperature. And compared to BCS theory, which is a quantitative theory that explains all experiments, here we find even to find an internally consistent picture is very hard. Okay. Mm-hmm. Question?
What's the vertical dash tunnel? The vertical dash tunnel below TCDW, that's the CDW phase or?
below TCDW, the vertical dashed line. Oh, I think this is probably a region people find CDW with long correlation lens with some magnetic field.
So the charge order above is just some short range CDW?
Yeah, it is short range, and yes. Well, but there's lattice disorder, so you may argue in a clean sample whether it's short range or long range. Okay. We can talk about it later. So here is my outline. I'll first give a brief review on the pseudo gap phenomena, and then review the idea of paradensity wave relevant to the pseudo gap. And after this, we can describe how to quantum disorder the paradensity wave to give a metallic phase that describes the low energy theory of pseudo gap. And our claim is that by considering this quantum disordered paradensity wave, we get a small electron pocket instead of the large Fermi surface. And the rest of the electrons goes into an insulator of pairs. And then I talk about a theoretical question related to this construction. That is, in general, if we consider a superconductor and start with the Bogoliubov bands, when we add fluctuation of the superconducting phase to kill the long range order of the superconducting band. So how does the Bogoliubov band evolve into a charge conserved band? And that's the theoretical problem we want to solve. And finally, we compare with experiments. So here, let me start with a review. So in order to introduce the exotic property of the pseudo gap, let me first introduce the usual expectation for a D-wave superconductor. Okay, the usual expectation is that we have an electron band at high temperature. Here zero is the Fermi energy. And we cut the band at the Fermi energy, and we have this large Fermi surface, the red line here. And below TC, we have a superconductor. And by the usual theory, we know that cuprate is a D-wave superconductor. And superconducting gap goes like cosine kx minus cosine ky. And the Fermi surface are all gapped except this four green dots. That's called a node. And this is the band structure. And the gap has its maximum at the blue dots. That's people call antinode. Okay, but this is not happens in experiments, right? And in experiments at very high temperature, we have this large Fermi surface. And below TC, we do have this D-wave superconductor with only four node. Okay, however, at a much higher temperature, below T star, we start to lose the Fermi surface. And what's seen experimentally is that a region of the Fermi surface near the antinode is gapped. And a region near the node is gapless. So it seems to have these arcs. Okay, this is measured directly by ARPAS. And ARPAS is an experiment that we kick out an electron by a photon and measure the energy and momentum of the electron to infer its energy and momentum inside the material. So here I show two ARPAS spectrum, one at a momentum near the node, so at the Fermi surface, somewhere here. And different lines are for different temperature. And the blue lines are below TC. And here we find there is a gap emerging. Above TC, we have this single peak near zero energy. That's because the point is on Fermi surface and the electron excitation energy here is zero. And below TC, we do see the peak shift to finite energy. And this is consistent with a D-wave superconductor. However, near the antinode, much above TC, we still have a gap like this. These red lines are all above TC. But you see that below T star, the single peak split into two peaks. Okay. So that's what people call pseudo gap. That's a gap of antinodal electron above TC, but below T star. So I should mention here, because RPAS is kicking out electrons, it only measures the occupied band. So the half of the figure above zero is fake. They just symmetrize it by hand. But in STM, we can measure both occupied and unoccupied electrons, and we do see a symmetric gap after momentum integration. Okay. So a problem of the pseudo gap is that it only appears above TC, that's at finite temperature. But at finite temperature, Fermi surfaces are not sharply defined. And as you can see, the peaks are pretty broad. And we cannot make sharp statement about the Fermi surface and the phase in general. So ideally, we want to kill the superconductor and to probe the pseudo gap physics at very low temperature where we can make sharp predictions. So one idea is to use magnetic field to kill the pseudo gap. And when people use magnetic field, they find that the critical field need to kill the superconductor is extremely low, near this 12% doping. And we immediately go into a metal phase. So this is suggesting maybe there is a nearby ground state that's competing with the D-wave superconductor. And so a small magnetic field may favor this metallic phase. So, and the hope is this, because the magnetic field is so small, it compared to the pseudo gap scale, it cannot affect the large pseudo gap we see in RPAS. So the hope is this metallic state is still has the pseudo gap, and it's the pseudo gap ground state we can study in details. And when people use a high enough field to kill the pseudo gap, and they measure the transport property, and it's seen there's quantum oscillation that's corresponds to a small electron Fermi surface. And other transport property also match a Fermi liquid of a small Fermi surface. So is that possible that after all, at very low energy, we just have a Fermi liquid with small Fermi surface, and that's what we want to explore?
So the magnetic field that kills the superconductivity seems to be 20 Tesla.
Yes.
If I convert it into energy, how much?
Mm-hmm. It's around 20 Kelvin, like 2 MeV.
And the T star is a few hundred Kelvin.
Yes, yes. Okay. So here our goal is to study this a pseudo gap ground state and make a low energy effective theory. So this can be done by this magnetic field, or we can just find the limit that this T star is much bigger than TC, and we stay at a temperature that is much smaller than T star. So compared to pseudo gap, it's S ground state, but still bigger than TC. So as theoretical physicists, when something is bigger than another, we assume it's much bigger. Okay, so that's the logic here. And we hope to do it by a single assumption using a quantum fluctuating pair density wave. Okay, before we talk about our approach, let me first introduce previous approaches. So now we know there's charge density wave. So we may naturally ask whether the charge density wave alone can explain the pseudo gap. And I think now there's general consensus that this is not possible, because if we were to give an electron gap by charge density wave alone, it doesn't match the RPAS result at all. And another line of thinking that is a traditional explanation of pseudo gap is to consider pre-existing pairs above TC. So assume electron form pairs, but the pairs do not condense and they're somehow fluctuating. So that we may get a metal phase. But this point of view may explain the decrease of the total density of states of fermion. However, it's hard to explain the arc because the D-wave superconductor only has a node. There's no reason to expect an arc. Okay, so now I start to introduce this idea of pair density wave and how it can help in this situation. And so in 2014, Patrick has this idea that maybe the entire pseudo-gap region is related to some fluctuating pair density wave. So here the idea is that we still use some kind of pre-existing pairs that do not condense, so fluctuating superconductivity in general. But we consider a different pairing. Instead of the D-wave pairing at zero momentum, we consider a pair density wave. So this pair density wave is a state that electron condense at finite momentum. So it not only break charge conservation, but also generate some spatial pattern, break spatial translation. So here we consider pair density wave in both x, y direction. And so there are four other parameters. Electron pairs can condense at plus px, minus px, plus py, and minus py. And because this pair density wave break translation symmetry, we naturally generate a charge density wave. And it's at momentum 2p. I will go back to this point later. So, but before I go into details about pair density wave, let me first list a few advantages and features of pair density wave in this situation. So it's unlike a D-wave superconductor where only nodes are gapless. Here, PDW only gap antinodal electrons because of the momentum. And this nodal electrons are gapless. And this pair density wave can not only explain the gap, but also explain the R-pass line shape in detail, as I will talk about later. And the pair density wave also generates a secondary charge density wave. So we do not need to postulate this charge density wave separately. So we can identify this momentum P as half of the observed momentum of charge density wave. And this picture also explains why there can be a small pocket at low energy and the quantum oscillation seen in high field. Okay, so now let me start to introduce the band structure of the pair density wave. So to compare, we first talk about the BCS superconductor at zero momentum. Here we do not have this zero momentum pairing, but let me start with the simple case. So in the usual BCS case, we have this electron band and we mix it with the whole band. And open a superconducting gap to get the Bogoliubov band. Okay, that's the usual story for BCS. This condensate scatter an electron into a hole so they can mix and that break charge conservation. So pair density wave is still a mix between electron and hole, but it's at different momentum. And its result is strongly momentum dependent. So here I show the pair density wave spectrum through these two line cuts, one passing the antinode and the other passing the node. Okay, for the line cut passing through the antinode, so we see that because the pair density wave momentum is approximately twice the Fermi momentum, and this pair density wave mixing is very efficient. So here is the electron band again, and we mix it with whole band. However, we shift the whole band to plus P momentum and minus P momentum because we have a pair density wave order. And then to hybridize this electron band and whole band and shifted momentum, we can get these three bands. And here the color doesn't mean anything. It's just automatic by MATLAB. But the important thing is that we see when the Fermi momentum is small, we can gap out the Fermi surface if we use a reasonable amplitude of higher density wave. However, for the other cut passing the node, things are very different. And we have the Fermi surface original electron band again, but here the Fermi momentum is pretty large. And we again mix with the whole band shifted by plus P and minus P. However, here now that near this Fermi momentum, there are no other degrees of freedom to mix with it. So this Fermi surface is barely changed. It's still gapless. So that's why a higher density wave only gap out the antinodal electron, but leaves the nodal electron gapless. Okay, any questions here? Okay, so in order to better understand the band structure in general, we need to consider how the Brillouin zone is folded. So here for simplicity, we consider a simple case when the period of the charge density wave and pair density wave are commensurate to the original lattice. So, and this pair density wave will generate some secondary order that fold the Brillouin zone. So here is how it happens. If we have an electron at momentum k, and we have a pair density wave at a condenser at p1 momentum, and this electron can be scattered into a hole at momentum minus k plus p1. However, when we have another pair density wave amplitude at a different momentum, we can scatter this hole back into an electron, and the net effect is just to shift its momentum. So it's a non-superconducting order with some momentum. And so if we choose p1 equals px and p2 equals minus px here, we can generate a charge density wave at 2px. And that's the charge density wave I talked before. Okay, and what this charge density wave can do is that it can connect the tips of the gapless arcs. So there are four gapless arcs, and this is charge density wave vector. And so this Harrison and Sebastian point out that this, if we use charge density wave to cut the arc and connect them together, we can get a small electron pocket that match the quantum oscillation result. And this is indeed what we find in the band structure calculation. However, in addition to the charge density wave, we also have an order at momentum px plus py because we have PDW in both x and y direction. And so they will also generate a secondary order at momentum px plus py and px minus py. However, at this momentum, there's no observation at all for a charge density wave. So are we rejected by experiment? So actually not. Unfortunately, this Attenberg pointed out a different possibility that this density wave can either be a charge density wave or a current modulation, orbital current generated by pair density wave. So because a charge density wave is not observed, we will take the scenario that this is purely current oscillation at this momentum.
Sorry, what's the difference in terms of symmetry?
In terms of symmetry?
Yeah, is there any difference?
This current density wave broke time reversal. It's like anti-ferromagnetic order of some kind. Okay. So technically it's whether we have charge density wave or current density wave is determined by the phase of this pair density wave, how the relative phase are locked together. Okay, so if we only have a charge density wave, we would expect the unit cell that's by 2p times 2px times 2py. However, we have this orbital current density wave. So we expect a smaller Brillouin zone. That's by this px plus py and px minus py. And this Brillouin zone is going to be crucial in our comparison with experiments later. So in summary, is that a high density wave gap out the antinodal electron, and charge density wave give you this small electron pocket. And this magnetization density wave from the orbital current give you the unit cell and brillouin zone. So that's for all the pi density wave.
Let me make sure I understand. Mm-hmm. So value of P is going to be determined by energetics, or is there any
special? Yes. In general, we cannot predict, but here we can use the measured wave vector for charge density wave to determine the pi density wave moment.
Thanks.
Okay. So with this understanding of ordered pi density wave state, we can go on and talk about how to quantum disorder the pi density wave and to get a metallic state. So people talk about this quantum disordered order, and it can be pretty confusing. So in order to make sure we're on the same page, so let me just give a definition I use, a simple definition. So when I say a quantum disordered order, a quantum fluctuating order of some order parameter O, I just mean that this order parameter O does not have long range order. It's not condensed and its average value is zero. But we are close to a transition into an ordered phase of O, a continuous transition, so that this order parameter O has a long correlation less. So whenever we have this situation, I can call it a fluctuating or quantum disordered phase of O. And here, this O refers to pi density wave. So in our, by this definition, okay, so to construct a quantum disordered pi density wave, we want to drive the pi density wave through a phase transition into a non-superconducting state. Study the property of this non-superconducting state close to the phase transition. Okay, so before we talk about how to quantum disorder the pi density wave, let's look at the band structure of pi density wave again. So the nice property we found when we use this pi density wave in both directions is that in a folded brillouin zone, there are many bands. However, only one band is gapless, and other bands are all gapped. So we have seen before that this gapless band is very weakly coupled to pi density wave because of the momentum mismatch. So when we disorder pi density wave, we can treat this band as weakly coupled to pi density wave. However, other bands are all gapped by pi density wave. So they are strongly coupled to pi density wave. And when we consider quantum disordered pi density wave, we want to treat them separately. So here is how we want to do it. So usually a superconducting order with a gapless fermion is very hard to deal with if we want to consider the fluctuation. That's because this gapless fermion dispersion is so largely dependent on the superconducting long range order. And when the phase is fluctuating, you may think the fermion is no longer a quasi-particle. And this line of thinking may lead to fractionalizations. And people have many discussions along this line. And if you consider a quantum fluctuating D-wave superconductor, the situation is still not clear. And however, we have a gapless arc here that connects into pocket. So is the situation harder or simpler? So we think this this arc and actually make the situation simpler. That's because this charge density wave connect the arcs into a separate pocket, and which is weakly coupled to pi density wave. And we can treat it separately. So this when we quantum disorder pi density wave, this Bogoliubov pocket just become an electron pocket. So the story we have is that when we disorder the power density wave, we treat the Kaplis band. We let the Kaplis band go back to an electron band. And the mixing between a whole band just disappears. And for the gapped band, which are strongly coupled to power density wave, we keep the pairing, but we want to drive the pairs into a multi-insulator state of pairs. And in general, we just have a Fermi liquid with a small Fermi surface, and the rest of the electrons are carried by a multi-insulator of pairs. And this is really the simplest situation we can think about in order to quantum disorder the power density wave. So let's just explore the experimental consequence of this scenario. Okay, so next I'll focus on the gapped part of this construction. So I will talk about how the antinodal pairs can form an insulator. What is the electron spectral function of this quantum disordered superconductor? So an important claim I made is that I want to kill the long-range order pair density wave, but still keep the pair density wave gap. So want the superconducting gap, but kill the order. Is that possible? Because you may think the gap is just a consequence of the order. So here it's actually a problem with the long history. And in general, when we kill the long-range order of superconductor, there are two possibilities. So in the weakly interacting case, these pairs are largely overlap in real space, and it's very loosely bound. And this electron gap is a collective phenomena. And when we disorder the pair, it's not so clear whether the electron gap is maintained or not. However, in a strong pairing limit, things are much simpler. And we can understand the electrons as first form a boson pair. And this electron gap here is just the bonding energy of the pair. And this pair is well-defined even for a single molecule here. So it's very clear that no matter the pair condense or not, there is always a single electron gap. Okay. In cuprates, we're not in the strong pairing limit, and we're never in the strong pairing limit. So it's experimentally estimated that the coherence length of the cuprate is around 4 to 5 lattice spacing. So roughly speaking, this is to say the electron pairs in real space, each pair has the size of roughly 4 to 5 spacing. So notice that it's very different from the Europe BCS limit, but this size of pair is roughly consistent, is comparable with the enlarged unit cell by the magnetization density wave and charge density wave. So here, this BCS limit may give us some inspiration. And so because we have this relatively tight pair comparable to the unit cell, so some repulsion between the pairs may drive it into a multi-insulator in the enlarged unit cell. Okay, and that's the idea. That's why the electron gap can persist even if we disorder the long-range order of superconductor. So here, we use the BEC limit as an inspiration to study the quantum disorder of pair density wave. Right. In BEC limit, it's very clear that adding some repulsion, we drive the boson to from a superconductor to an insulator. And the insulator can either be a multi-insulator and a Wigner crystal, which further break translation. But the simplest case is just we have a multi-insulator. So let's first explore this simple case. And if you open up Subir's book, for example, you know near the transition, the system is described by a boson, relativistic boson field theory. And it's relativistic because the boson here have commensurate density. And near the multi-insulator, So for mount insulator near the transition, we have a small insulating gap. So in this, so across this transition, the electron gap is always finite and large, and only the boson gap close.
Question.
That's because,
When you say the boson density is commensurate, do you have to assume some particular order, wave vector for the PDW?
Let's not worry about that. So I will talk about why the boson density can be commensurate afterwards. So now let's just assume the boson density happened to be commensurate.
Question.
So
it's about the coherence length. So does it remain of the same order as you go across the doping axis, or does it change drastically?
It doesn't change much. Near the doping I'm talking about, it doesn't change much. Okay. So let's go back to this transition. So the point is that here, the low energy excitation are purely bosonic. And we have so if you quantize this theory, we get a boson with relativistic dispersion, and the low energy excitation is charged 2E bosons and charged minus 2E vacancy of bosons, and they are approximately symmetric. But now we don't have a perfectly tight pair. We only have a loosely bound pair. So however, by continuity, we expect when we gradually lower the pairing, this transition must still exist for at least a range of pairing. However, because the pair is rather loose in real space, we don't expect a multi-insulator with a very large gap. And we expect, because the boson is large and their interaction is mirrored out, so the repulsion, effective repulsion is small, and we naturally stay close to the transition point. And that's the assumption we will use. And we will see this idea actually match the experiments pretty well. So, okay, now hopefully I have convinced you that when we disorder the superconductor, the electron gap can maintain. However, there is a paradox here. So in a superconductor, this paradox even exists in a simple S-wave superconductor. So let's just consider it in general. So given a superconductor, we have a Bogoliubov band. Okay, now we consider quantum disorder the superconductor, but drive it into an insulator of pairs. We know by this continuous transition, the band theory should not change much. However, in the insulator, how can we have a band similar to the Bogoliubov band? Isn't it strictly forbidden by charge conservation? So now let's try to solve this puzzle. Okay, I will not let you think about it. Let me just tell you our answer. Oh, sorry. So here the important thing is that we're so used to think about an insulator where the low energy excitations are electrons and holes. But here we have an insulator where the low energy excitation are pairs. And here is the cartoon of a ground state of bosonic multi-insulator in real space. And at each site, we have a pair of, a boson here. As I said, the low energy excitations in this state are really pair excitations. And electron and hole excitation only comes at very high energy. And electron and hole are thus greatly affected by this low energy bosons. For example, in RPAS, you can kick out an electron and create this single hole state. However, because this boson has very low energy, the single hole state can easily emit a vacancy of boson and becomes an electron excitation. So there is a two-particle state with one electron plus a vacancy of boson that has the same quantum number as the single hole excitation. So they two will always mix. So now let's consider this Bogliubov band in the superconductor again. So here, part of the Bogliubov band comes from the original electron band. So, and the other part comes mainly from the mixing with hole band. And this breaks charge conservation. And this cannot happen when the superconductor is desoldered. So here, it may be better to look at the equations. Right. In an ordered superconductor, we solve the 2x2 matrix to get a Bogliubov quasiparticle that's mixing between electron and holes. However, here the superposition depends on the phase of the superconducting order parameter. Right. When the phase EI phi, when this phi is has a fixed value, it's just coherent superposition. However, when this phi is fluctuating, we should consider this EI phi as a boson creation operator. And this mixing is really an electron mixing with the boson hole continuum, so as illustrated here. So what happens to our quantum desoldered superconductor is that for the electron part of the band, it's still okay. The electron dispersion is just slightly distorted by pairing. However, for momentum smaller than kF, at this occupied momentum, we cannot create an electron again. But what we can do is we can remove an electron, but create a pair at zero momentum. And that gives us a two-particle excitation that has the same quantum number of electrons. So it shows up in the electron addition spectrum. So similarly here, for the electron removal spectrum, for occupied momentum, we can remove an electron. But for this unoccupied momentum, what we can do is just we can add an electron, but remove a pair. So that again gives a two-particle continuum, right? And so then what happens as we gradually reduce momentum to go from outside of Fermi surface to inside of Fermi surface is that here the electron is largely a single particle. And as we move to kF, it mixes with the particle hole state, but the boson and pairs forms a bond state, and electron mix with this bond state. And then near this transition point, it's largely almost 100% a bond state of a hole and a pair. And so it's no longer have any overlap with the original electron. And if we go further into the Fermi surface, this hole and pair just do not bond anymore. And it becomes the two-particle continuum we talk about. So that's how a superconducting band can change to a charge-conserving band. But here, this boson fermion continuum plays an important role here, because the boson have a very low energy. So there's an additional feature that whenever we have a quasi-particle, well here we have a quasi-electron, we can always add a charge 2e pair and a charge minus 2e pair, and to give a three-particle continuum just above the quasi-particle excitation. And this will naturally happen in the state. So here we can sketch what we should see in RPAS as an electron spectral function. For k bigger than kF, we see an electron quasiparticle and a three-particle continuum of one electron and two boson. But at this momentum, for electron removal, we only have a broad two-particle continuum that we can easily calculate by Fermi-Golden rule to be a step function. And for k smaller than kF, the spectrum is like exactly the same but reflected. We have quasi-hole and three-particle continuum for hole and a two-particle continuum for adding an electron.
Sorry, is the entire state just gapped?
Is which state gapped?
The entire state.
Oh yeah, the so remember we separate the original problem into two. For antinodal electron, we drive them to an insulator, and it's entirely gapped. But there is still a gapless band I haven't talked about.
Okay.
Can you repeat why the bosons have a small energy?
So we just assume it phenomenologically, but one reason why it has a small gap is that because the boson is so loosely bound, and the effective repulsion becomes small. For example, in the BCS limit, we just have a mean field where the boson does not have any repulsion at all. Does that answer your question? Hello?
Yeah, okay.
Can I ask another question before you move on?
Sure.
So actually a couple of slides back. Basically this. So you're assuming, at some point you're assuming that you want to disorder the PDW, but keep all the CDW and the loop current order. So why would that be different from just assuming there is an MDW and CDW? Presumably,
so the difference is this. The reason we only have one gapless band is that other bands are all gapped by pi density wave. If we only have MDW and CDW, there would be multiple gapless bands. I'll give tons of gapless pockets. And you cannot get rid of them by just consider, for example, Hartree-Fock of the CDW or MDW.
I see.
And so here the key, so this is actually a very important question. So we have an electron band that's pretty deep and we cannot gap it by usual orders. But so what we're doing is like slightly cheating here, is we use a pairing to open a gap in the middle. And we disorder it, so it's a gapping of a deep electron band without breaking any symmetry at the end.
So presumably that means those bands come with a integer total filling to begin with?
Oh yeah, that's an important question. So we cannot argue why it must have integer filling, but we can just prove that the state we consider is locally stable. For example, at some filling, if the gap band happen to have an integer filling,
okay,
and the electron band happen to satisfy Luttinger Liquid theorem,
uh-huh,
and when you add additional electron, it's favorable for electron going to the gapless sector instead of paying the Mott gap.
I see.
So this state is at least stable for a range of doping.
All right, thanks.
But to determine whether it really happens, we can only look at experiments.
Sure.
So now I compare the result with experiment. So actually there is a very exciting experiment last year, exciting to us, and that there are pretty strong evidence for a short-range pi density wave observed in strong magnetic field. So what they do on the experiment is to use magnetic field to create vortex in the D-wave superconductor. But the D-wave superconductor is still there, not killed. They're only vortex. And they scan the density of states in this state. And they found that near the vortex of the D-wave superconductor, they see a new density wave. And the wave vector is just exactly half of the previous charge density wave, so just as we expected. However, it's a superconducting state, and this density wave is automatically both charge density wave and pi density wave, because charge conservation is already broken in the first place. So you may argue whether the charge density wave is primary or the pi density wave is primary and induce the other. Okay. So we think it's not still not decisive yet, but it's slightly favoring the Pi density wave being the primary order. And so this is the experiment. And our interpretation of this experiment is that because we assume a Pi density wave amplitude that's fluctuating in the entire pseudo gap. So, but the Pi density wave is fluctuating. So usually it cannot be detected by STM. And the reason we think this Pi density wave becomes static in this experiment is that near the vortex of D wave superconductor, the phase winding can pin the Pi density wave. This because the phase winding gives spatial inhomogeneity, some gradient of the phase naturally coupled to pseudo Pi density wave. And this Pi density wave with the superconductor generate charge density wave at the same wave vector. And so now, since I still have some time, let me explain this idea of thinking can naturally explain the very small critical magnetic field HC2 we see in previous slides. The idea is that usually superconductor is killed when vortex core overlap. But however, here we not only have a vortex core, but have an extended region that people call vortex halo, where you have Pi density wave pinned by the vortex. And so one idea is that maybe when the Pi density wave patches overlap, it's enough to kill the D wave superconductor. So this Pi density wave metallic state, fluctuating Pi density wave metallic state, may be a competing state to the D wave on state. So however, when we kill the D wave superconductor, there is no vortex to pin the Pi density wave, and the Pi density wave should fluctuating again. And so we naturally get a ground state with fluctuating Pi density wave. And this is our interpretation of the experiment. So another comparison is between the RPAS. Okay. It's usually not so easy to study the pseudo gap spectrum at zero at very low temperature. But in this beast called 2201, it's a single layer cuprate material, and Tc is much smaller than T star. So this allows us to probe the pseudo gap spectrum at very low temperature. So here is what they do. I show a scan of the spectrum along this green cut. And at high temperature, they see this red dot, that's original electron band. And below the T star pseudo gap temperature, they see this blue dots here. And this blue dots is gathered from this more detailed spectrum here. And this blue dots correspond to this blue dots. Okay. And however, you see that this spectrum is different lines of different momentums. And this line is for momentum here. And to go going up, we actually moving inside the Fermi surface and out again. And this M is the middle of the brilliant zone. And this Kg is the gap minimum here. And the Kf is the original Fermi momentum going like this. So here you see that instead of peak, we actually have a step function. That's pretty amazing and very weird for low temperature spectrum. At low temperature, we usually expect sharp peaks. But this step function is actually what we expect for a two-particle continuum. And because if you use a Pi density wave, this part of band actually coming from the reflection. And when the Pi density wave disordered, it's a two-particle continuum, as we said. And when you move inside the Fermi surface, you see that a broad peak gradually emerge on top of the step function. And one possibility why we have this broad peak with a long tail is that this one particle peak is somehow broadened a little and to mix with three particle continuum. And that can give a broad peak. And the reason why this one particle peak can have a little broadening is because we have another gapless band And this fermion can decay into three gapless fermions. And this may give some problem. Okay, so I would say our picture that going from a two-particle continuum to a broad peak with a long tail emerge, and this tail is 1 over omega, roughly speaking, and is consistent with the R-pass. Okay, and now I mentioned the Luttinger theorem. So it's actually the charge density wave in real material actually has a period changing with the doping. So it's not a strictly commanded. So if we want to compare with experiment, we can choose the points that this charge density wave happened to have commanded period and ask whether a Luttinger theorem is satisfied with the small electron pocket observed in quantum oscillation. Okay, and this is a definitive test and there is no fitting parameters here. So for YBCO, we see its charge density wave has wave vector about 2 pi over 3 at 8% doping. And at 8% doping, and the pocket size is also known. So we find it just happened to satisfy the Luttinger theorem. And it's a very non-trivial test, I should say. If this commanded happened at 12% doping, we would strongly violate Luttinger. Okay. And for this mercury at near 12% doping, we have this about 2 pi over 4, the charge density wave period momentum. And if we use the charge density wave period, we violate Luttinger theorem strongly. However, if we use the magnetization density wave brilliant zone, we happen to satisfy the Luttinger theorem again. So here, although this order is not detected experimentally, if you trust Luttinger theorem and you say there's no other excitation at low energy, you must have this unit cell. Okay.
What do I need and so, to MDW?
What?
How could MDW be measured?
Oh, because its current is harder to measure than charge. For example, if you use X-ray scattering, X-ray coupled to density change, not to current change.
Right, but is there a way to measure it?
Oh, in principle, you can use neutron scattering.
Okay.
Okay, but that can be done in the future, maybe. Okay, and so I should emphasize that if there's no pi density wave, there would be additional gapless pocket. So again, you will violate Luttinger. Okay. So this pi density wave surprisingly matched with the experiment. Okay, so finally, maybe let me just talk about one last experiment. So it's a very surprising experiment, and it's already there for at least 20 years, but people haven't never explained it. So it's measured the conductivity, the real part of conductivity as a function of frequency. And usually we should expect for a metal, we expect a Joule peak that decays at 1 over omega square at high frequency. But for cuprates, we found it saturated to some plateau, right? And if you, this is 3D conductivity. And if you convert the conductivity into the conductivity per layer, and I found it's actually very close to this pi over 2 E squared over H, actually, within 10% accuracy. And well, so this universal order of magnitude needs an explanation, right? And when we go to a lower temperature, there is even an upturn, right? Starting from about 40 MeV, right? So, and it has nothing to do with the superconducting D wave. That feature is at much lower temperature here. Okay, so now we have a boson that also have charge. This relativistic boson can also absorb light. If you calculate the conductivity from a relativistic gap boson, you see an upturn at 2 times boson gap and saturate. And if you use free boson, it's exactly pi over 2 squared over h. I find it pretty interesting. But we cannot treat this number too seriously because some interaction can change the number, but the order of magnitude would not change. So, and this it's surprising match between theory and experiment. And when we add additional Joule peak coming from Electra, we may get this this orange curve that match the experiment at higher temperature. Okay. Okay. In conclusion, we consider a quantum disorder pair density wave to give a low energy theory of the pseudo gap. And at the end, we just have a small electron pocket Fermi liquid, plus a multi-insulator of pairs. And it successfully explains many experiments, including the RPAS and the infrared conductivity, and maybe even a small HC2 and the charge density wave and quantum oscillation Schrödinger theorem at high field. And I find this story pretty appealing. So the magnetization density wave we predict may be measured in the future by neutron scattering. And if we measure a bosonic quasiparticle at low energy, at finite momentum, that would be a direct evidence for this theory. Okay, let me stop here. Thank you for your time.
So we have time for one or two questions.
Can you go back one slide? Actually, all right, yeah. So this presumably, to have something like this, the only thing I need is at some low energy, I have some preformed Cooper pair that will do it.
So you I think what you need is a relativistic charged particle. Even if you have a Dirac cone of electron, it may still get something like E squared over H, but the number would be different, would be smaller.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the key point is that I think you have some gap, the relativistic particle should match this result.
Has there been experimental evidences of orbital loop current, like you mentioned?
Sorry, are you asking for experimental evidence for orbital loop current?
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, maybe we don't call it loop current because this loop current of Vama is very different from ours. So I don't want to give people an impression I will consider their loop current. So this is a long period, okay. So currently there's no experimental evidence for this magnetization density wave at the wave vector we're talking about. So we estimate the amplitude of the magnetization density wave is actually just at the threshold of some experimental probes. So there is a reason why it's never detected before, but in the future, maybe it can be detected.
Actually, can you remind me the difference between this and Vama's loop current? So that one doesn't break translation, right?
That one is, that one doesn't break translation. It's loop current in each unit cell. It has a very large magnetization compared to ours. It's 1,000 times larger in amplitude, and it's only a loop oscillating in one unit cell between the oxygen and the copper.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Any other question? So if not, that's simple. So how again?